listening to Valley Edition. I'm Joe Moore. From the honky-tonks of Oildale to concert halls around the world, the hard-driving, guitar-driven country music that came out of Kern County, known as the Bakersfield Sound, has captured millions of fans. Superstars like the late Buck Owens and Merle Haggard, not to mention hundreds of other musicians, made Bakersfield, at least for a few decades, a true rival of Nashville's famed Music Row. Now a new album by Vince Gill and pedal steel guitarist Paul Franklin seeks to honor that music. It's called simply Bakersfield. Vince joins us now on the telephone. Vince, welcome to Valley Public Radio.
Thanks, Joe. How you doing, pal?
Doing great, and we're looking forward to your upcoming performances here in California's Central Valley. Vince and Paul are taking their show on the road. They'll be performing at the Rabobank Theater in Bakersfield this Friday night, then on Saturday up Highway 99 in Turlock at the Turlock Community Theater, and finally in Visalia at the historic Fox Theater on Friday, November 1st. Vince, it has to be exciting to do an album like this and then actually take your music on tour to the city that inspired it.
Well, you're correct. This is one of the most rewarding things I've ever done in my career. I think I've always written my own songs, and I've always tried to emulate what guys like Buck and Merle did by being singer-songwriters, and to be able to take the great songs of theirs and put my stamp on it along with Paul's was arguably one of the greatest things I've ever gotten to try to do. I adored this music as a young boy. You know, when I was young, this was the music that was about as hot as it could get, you know, in our world, and so it was very much ingrained in me. And even all the years that I played and made records that never did anything like this, I was always borrowing from those guys and always, you know, using the influences that I had from them in just about everything I'd done. So it seemed only right that I should do some of their songs.
Absolutely. And it's a great record, and we'll listen to some more selections in just a moment. But, you know, people talk a lot about the Bakersfield sound today. Do you think it's almost hard today to appreciate how revolutionary this was back, say, you know, 1963 when Act Naturally came out, compared to what Nashville was doing at the time? It was such a different sound.
Yeah, I think that, you know, obviously in the last 50-plus years, I think that has made that music even more reverent and more traditional. But in its day, in comparison to what was going on here, it was much different. You know, it was much more hard-driving. It was much simpler. It was a little more roadhouse, a lot more beer jointy, and not as lush and cosmopolitan. And so in a sense, to me, it sounded like it was rocking more. They'd always had it very beer joint minded, very honky tonk minded. It was stripped down. It was a 4 or 5 piece band with one guy singing harmony and Don Rich, and you know, just simple. But yet, because of its space, you know, that music left a lot of space, and that's what I think what I liked about it was how raw it felt.
You mentioned Don Rich. You know, people, when they talk about the Bakersfield sound, of course, Buck and Merle, but there's so many other musicians that made all of that possible. And
yeah, buddy.
Don's Telecaster, boy, that's such a signature sound of the Bakersfield sound. Of course, he died all too young at age 33 in a motorcycle accident. What do you think of when you think of somebody like Don Rich?
Well, he was probably as big a mentor to me as Buck or Merle or Ralph Mooney or Tom Brumley or any of those guys, because he was not only the musician that he was, but he was the harmony singer too. And he's kind of the heart and soul. He was Buck's right arm, you know, right hand. And just the two of them together were so seamless. It was like, you know, it was not unlike the Lubin brothers or the Everly brothers or that kind of thing. And, I just adored Don Rich and learned to play Buckaroo as a kid. And, you know, Buck played a lot of guitar, too. Buck was a much better guitar player than he ever gets credit for. He played a lot of the guitar stuff on those earliest records before Don became a part of Buck's sound. And Buck sang his own harmonies, too, for a lot of those early records. But you talk about this record I made, you know, was with Paul Franklin. And I think one of the real common bonds for both of those guys, Buck and Merle, was Ralph Mooney. He played on both of their records. before Tom Brumley came along to start playing with Buck. And he was a great part of the definition of that sound, too, you know, because once again, you compare the steel guitar stylings of Ralph Mooney versus maybe what was going on here with Buddy Emmons or some of the guys like that. They would have played a lot prettier and a lot smoother. But Ralph played a lot more hard driving and a little more intense. And once again, that was as much a part of the sound. It just was a combination of all those things. You know, it was meant to be.
Speaking of great combinations, your co-leader on this record is Paul Franklin. And while he's not a household name for a lot of casual music fans, he certainly is a musical titan of the pedal steel. Tell us a little about Paul and your relationship and how far that goes back.
Well, Paul and I have been friends for about 35 years. And we've played music together off and on all those years, you know, in the studios and things like that. And he was the one that played on my first hit record, When I Call Your Name. He played the steel guitar solo on that. I've always been probably the biggest fan of the steel guitar of anybody on earth and always loved the sound of it. And I got to travel for many years with the great John Huey. John was a great steel guitar player that played on all the Conway Twitty records and was arguably one of the best steel guitar players ever. And I always was drawn to wanting one of those kinds of musicians to be my right hand, like I said earlier, that Don Rich was for Buck Owens. And I think you can make the same case for either Roy Nichols or Norm Hamlet, that they were the glue behind a lot of Merle's records. And then you throw James Burton in there, too. He played on a lot of Merle's early records along with Roy. And I don't know my history well enough to know who exactly played on what. But just, once again, being around musicians like Paul has been my favorite thing. I've recorded with probably, 600-700 artists over the years on their records and duets and things. And I just decided if I was going to make a duet record, I should make one with a musician. Cause that's what I've always been. I was always a musician first, singer second, songwriter third. So I wanted to honor my history, too, as much as I wanted to play music with Paul. I just think he's brilliant.
And your version of Together Again on this new CD really is just that. It's a duet. It's an incredible piece. Let's go ahead and listen to that now.
Together again. All my gray skies are gone.
Tell me about recording this, and boy, Paul has a great solo on this one.
Yeah, I think if you go back to Buck's original record, you'd be hard-pressed to not find a more definitive, more compelling solo than Tom Brumley played on Together Again. And I think it's probably the most famous steel guitar solo in history. And even when I bought a steel when I was about 18 or 19, tried to learn to play, the one solo I tried to learn to play was Together Again by Tom Brumley and Buck. And Paul, you know, obviously tried to have some semblance of what Tom had done. Neither one felt compelled to make a copy-minded record. We wanted this to be the way we play. And as much as we were influenced by all those guys, we still had to find a way to play like we do. To me, there's never been anything that compelling about a note-for-note record. I think that you should have your own creativity spin on things, and Paul certainly does, and he takes that steel guitar solo to the most beautiful place.
Tell us about selecting the material for this album. Merle's such a prolific songwriter. How did you go about trying to pare this down to 10 songs? That had to be a challenging task.
Well, I think more than anything, once again, as much as this became a singing record, the point was to pick songs that really suited the way I play the Telecaster and the way Paul played the steel guitar. You know, I didn't want to do a song unless it couldn't have a great opportunity for a steel solo or a guitar solo. So that was kind of the prerequisite. There was a couple of songs that we felt like were deal breakers. Together Again would be one of them. That's one of the greatest songs ever. But yet we wanted to try to find some things that weren't just the biggest hits that both of them had. And in Buck's case, we found two songs I didn't even know. I didn't think you could stump me with Buck trivia. And we found But I Do, a Tommy Collins song that Buck recorded early in his career, and also another song called He Don't Deserve You Anymore. And once again, songs I didn't know, but suited themselves very, very well to what Paul would play on them. Because with Merle, there was one song that I knew I had to do, and that was I Can't Be Myself. It's always been probably my favorite Merle song, and had that one good prison song, so I think Branded Man. And then just a little edge with Fight Inside of Me, and what else did we do? The Bottle Let Me Down, the greatest drinking song ever written, and Holding Things Together. Holding Things Together and I Can't Be Myself are the two staple Merle songs that I've sung my whole life. Whatever bar I go into and somebody say, hey, we get up and sing one, about 100% of the time it would be one of those two songs. So some of the selections were kind of, like I said, they were deal breakers and songs that we both knew we wanted to do, and then some were trying to find a handful that weren't quite so popular and this and that, and showcase what Paul could do and hopefully I could do with a guitar. It's as much an instrumental record as a singing record. I think that's probably hard to explain to people because they put on the record and they hear me sing, and that's probably where they're really going to point their focus to for most people. But a lot of the music-type folks that really like the intricacies and all the moving parts, you know, they're gonna get that it's as much an instrumental record for Paul and I as it is a singing record.
And it's received a warm reception from all quarters, including Hag himself. He wrote the liner notes to this. Tell me about sending it to him.
Yeah, that was Paul's idea. I was so grateful Paul thought of that. And you know, I don't have enough words to describe how much I revere Merle Haggard. And that was, you know, talk about the litmus test of wanting to really pass. That was the one. I figured, you know, Paul and I both said, well, if he really likes it, then job well done. That's all that matters. And he really genuinely seemed to enjoy this record. I think because he knew we didn't, you know, like I said earlier, a sound-alike record, a note-for-note record, it doesn't serve much purpose. And so we kind of tried to put our own stamp on things, and I tried to play the intro to Fight Inside of Me similar to the way the record was, but I bent the strings in a totally different way, and I think I found a really neat new way to play that, you know. And you know exactly after three notes what song it is, but it's not played anything like the original. And same goes for Paul on just about everything he played on there.
Earlier this year, the Country Music Hall of Fame opened a new exhibit about the Bakersfield sound. It was so popular, they actually extended its run. A couple of years ago, President Obama honored Merle Haggard at the Kennedy Center, and you were there with Brad Paisley and performed Working Man Blues for Merle on the stage. And now this new album is out. Do you think that there's a more of a greater appreciation for the legacy of Buck and Merle and the Bakersfield sound beyond just here in California now, in Nashville and beyond? Because sometimes there was that tension between Nashville and those of us here in California. But do you think that's sort of, with perspective and years, becoming more appreciated now?
You know, I obviously was not here in the early 60s when all that transpired, but I've never felt that. I've never felt that from anybody here. I don't think there's anything but the most, I don't know how to describe it. There's so much respect for Buck and Merle here that I can't fathom that anybody didn't think it was the greatest thing they'd ever heard when it came here, too, when they did it originally. I think they've always had that rock star status from Nashville especially. You know, and I don't know that I believe that rift really existed. You know, it might have from a business sense and things like that, but from musical people, no. I think they always, and the whole world knew how great they were. And, you know, at the same time, the whole world knew how great other people from here were. I hear the same thing about Austin and Nashville now. You know, Austin's a much cooler, you know, and I go, you know. Musical people are just musical people, and I think Bakersfield wound up being a place that so many people migrated to during the Depression and the Dust Bowl that took the honky-tonks with them. They took the music with them. The same thing happened here. People migrated here and made this a melting pot of musical people. And so I've never seen any honest kind of rift that you speak of. And to tell you the truth, when I was 6 years old, I didn't know where the hell any of it came from. I just liked it. Yeah. I didn't know where it was recorded. You know, I didn't know where Merle Haggard made his records as a kid. And I think most people wouldn't know when they listen to the radio if a record was made in California or Tennessee.
And that's the real test right there. If it yeah, sounds right. Good, it's good.
That's right.
Again, our guest today on Valley Edition has been Vince Gill. He and Paul Franklin are on tour right now supporting their new CD that's called Bakersfield. In fact, they're taking their music, the tribute to Buck Owens and Merle Haggard, on the road to the Valley this week. They're performing at the Rabobank Theater in Bakersfield this Friday night, then up Highway 99 in Turlock at the Turlock Community Theater on Saturday, and then finally in Visalia at the historic Fox Theater on Friday, November 1st. Vince Gill, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure, partner. Look forward to coming to see everybody.